He had called for me to when he started on this film, but I wasn't available and I couldn't get out of it. And so he had to, the production had to get going. And once, and he was like, "Well, let me know when you're free." So I knew at that point that he had already hired artists, and there was, it's never guaranteed that they can just make a space for you because production's production, right? So I was actually going to be in this director's town for like my wife had a conference there, and I was speaking at. So I decided to just email this director saying, "Hey, I'm going to be in your town. Would you like to meet? Can we meet for coffee?" And I'm, and I was like, "Well, shit, I gotta entice him." So I said, "I'm gonna have some artwork that's gonna blow you away." And he wrote back and he's like, "Yeah, let's do that. That timing is perfect." And I was like, "Oh, fantastic, this is great." And then I realized, "Oh shit, that's in 2 weeks. I don't have any artwork. I don't have any ideas of what to do." And I've just promised this A-list director images that are gonna blow him away, which is like a high bar.
How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. I'm pretty tired, always working, like I was just saying. Just but on weekends I make time to play soccer, spend time with my family, do a little art. I'm in my studio and started doing family art night. So my daughter's in, for a freshman in high school, and we just play. Like when we do art night, it's like I just put music on and we have drinks, she doesn't, but we just, it's fun. It's nice, a nice tradition.
That's great. That's great. And I know you've been busy. We've been trying to like schedule this for quite a while, and finally it's happening. So
Yeah.
amazing. Thanks for having time for this. I mean, I've known you for quite a bit. I've obviously followed your work forever. Yeah, there's like top five or top 10 artists that I could list. Like it's yourself, Craig Mullins, Ryan Church,
Oh, wow.
Dylan Cole. Like those names kind of like got me into the industry, to be fair. Like when I was kind of learning how to do art, and like being this young polished student of
Yeah.
electrical engineering, it's like, what am I doing? Am I gonna be an electrician?
Wow, I didn't know that about you.
So that was like, that was kind of like a big motivation. It's like, if those guys can do it, like, I wish I could do something like those guys can do, And I just kind of worked towards it and
Yeah.
eventually got to a point where I am. So I'm very happy about it, But
Absolutely.
yeah,
That's quite a
yourself and
step.
others are big part of it. Yeah, you've been a veteran of the industry, right? Like, how many years you've been in film and entertainment?
Mean, man, ages, like my first job out of college was I mean, what you I know what you're trying to say is that I'm just I was going to say you were just old. Like, veteran, old is kind of the same thing. But no, it totally doesn't. Like, I felt like,
I have gray hair, not you. I do.
the Yeah, no, I loved my early days, man. I was lucky. I got an internship at the only way to get from Ohio. I grew up in the Midwest, and there was just no, even though I went to industrial design school, it was like how to make a design a vacuum cleaner, and it was really like that was like the top level of like I had no teachers, so two could get me there. So I did a lot of self-training, and then tried to get into car design because I thought that's more like realistic than movie work. And then I got some internships in there, and then I realized, being a concept designer it's our like. You have to, when I get there's professionals saying like, "Oh man, I've graduated from art center, top of my class, and you know, if I'm lucky in 10 years, I'll get chosen to design a, you know, a concept car. And like, now I'm just doing like hubcaps and interiors, and I'm just like, oh man, might as well just go for a, you know, just go for it. Just get my ass out to California and just try it. So, yeah, I got an internship, and that got me my foot in the door, just to literally just to start asking questions and learning skills and how to improve and just chain myself to a desk and keep drawing.
What year was that? And I'm trying to put it in like a time scale to
Well,
figure
it's
that out.
embarrassing to say, but it was 19. I started at Los Angeles Light Magic like 94 or something like that.
Okay.
A while ago. My
Wow.
first job,
Yeah.
one of my first big jobs was doing storyboards on Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. I was shitting my diapers. Well, not anymore, but I was pretty young when Forrest Gump came out. You know what I mean? Yes, that was that's prior to digital art, to like to be honest, right?
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
Like what? When was the Photoshop? Like the first Photoshop released? When it was like, like end of '90s, right? Like in '98, '97, something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Super wild how things have changed, right? Like from then to now, it's like we were kind of like are a history book in a way, like understanding the whole birth and you know where digital art is.
I
Very
mean,
crazy.
I was just pulling out a friend of mine who's a videographer. He's like, I just want to get you know, some footage of you, like, you know, drawing and in your studio. And I thought, well, I can use some of that from this conference in Paris that's coming up. So I said, sure. And I pulled out all these old originals, like, you know, on the Matrix, I was doing drawings, you know, 3 foot long, because that's what Jeff Darrow was doing, and I was inspired by it. And, you know, just and it was just so fun to just like pull out a piece of paper and just like draw, you know, that scale, and you know, just using the old techniques. And just, you know, I think literally my favorite thing in this in art is to be like standing at a desk and, you know, drawing with my arm. And you know, it's kind of like a full body experience when you're creating art with your, you know, in that
Yeah.
way, as opposed to sort of sitting back with your mouse and everything. It's I don't know, it's visceral, or I don't know, I just so I'm happy to have been around during those that time of where people appreciated it and gave you the time to kind of, you know, draw and iterate in that way.
Yeah, you think it changed much since, I mean, it did, but like how dramatically? Because I joined film, like let's say film industry specifically, because I've been games, video games before. Up until recently, video games have been completely different in terms of how they were produced and approached than film industry. Because even when I was joining, film industry had it was way more organized and you know way more like production kind of focused compared to video games. Although video games were picking up, but you have like a kind of larger kind of bird's eye view on the industry. Like how much you think it changed since you started?
Well, without getting like, I mean, without just personally, you know, when I think back about like when it used to, like earlier in the career, in my career, I was, when I was in art departments, I don't know, because part of it is how my career has changed, and I can't really separate it from how that has changed. Because, you know, the earlier I was, you know, embedded in the studio or in with the directors and the art department team, and then we would go once the, you know, quite often I did a lot of movies with the Wachowskis, and they would, you know, they're huge fans of artists, and they would just take, you know, kind of the top artists into, when they'd go to Berlin or London or Sydney, and you know, put them up with the actors, and we, you know, and get to be, you know, get all the per diem and play in this new city and still do the art, and it was really like a family, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And they would bring you into their family because there's so much about the art being integral to their work. So, and then, you know, being remote, obviously that's a lot more detached. It's not so much of a family. You're more of
Right.
like a hired gun. And that, you know, I would even if those situations go around, once you start having your own family and your house, and you want to, you don't mind not having a commute. And so I was happy to be, kind of young at that time when that was going on. And now I'm absolutely happy to to just like turn in my hired gun work and then leave it and not think have to think about it, or so that's perfectly fine with me. As far as like how's the industry changed, I mean, one thing that I'm noticing right now is like I'm on a film and I'm like the only person. And I mean, it's a start, it's a beginning, but I'm I think with technology and certainly with AI later, the kind of like your A-listers are going to be able to turn out more work than, I think in every industry, not just in art. You hear about, when you read about AI and affecting every, it's sort of like it's going to make the top people more productive, and because it's just it's. So and I you know I, and you know I, you know I'm just curious how that's going to go, if it's just productions or producers are going to say to producers are going to say, hey, wow, we did that whole movie with just a handful of people, let's why are we the next movie, let's only have a handful of people, right? Why do we need more? And I'm just yeah I'm curious, just as something on my radar.
Yeah, I think about it too. I have my own thoughts where things could possibly go with AI specifically. But it's funny. I had this conversation with my friend John Berube. He was he used to be a VFX art director over at Blizzard. He directed a couple of cinematics too. Really prolific guy. Super knowledgeable. And we were just talking the other night about AI and the concept of entropy. Because like if you understand how AI is being trained right now, it's sort of like it's gathering all the information that exists. It doesn't come up with new information, honestly. It's sort of like it's only gathering what exists, and the more data you have, the more information it will be able to churn. But if you ask it something or prompt it for something that doesn't land in this kind of cluster of truth, let's say, it will kind of, they call it hallucination. It will still try to convince you that it's true, but it'll basically kind of kid bash information together to make it sound like it's true. But it will never reason why. It's just gonna create based on information that exists, right? So it's kind of like a copy paste kind of machine. Of like millions and trillions of different data information, let's say, right? And I was just thinking, like funny you mentioned, the idea of, hey, like producers thinking in a way where, hey, like if we can get away with just making a movie with two illustrators instead of five, or even one instead of five, then let's just do that from now on because they're gonna be able to produce everything we need. But that creates two kind of things. One is it discourages people who are like up and coming to continue. So now the gap becomes massive, right? And then those at the top dwindle away eventually, like retire or, just sort of like the sample set becomes much smaller. And so everything kind of becomes more narrow visually, if that makes sense, right? And that kind of feeds to the entropy of things, meaning like there's going to be less innovation because less artists are going to be involved. It's just going to be much smaller, more contracted market. I wonder if that's going to be sort of like the balance, almost like a balancing act to the whole,
I
AI
mean,
boom.
I agree with all that, and then the flip side, which I don't know if I'm curious about, but I had read, is that okay, AI will minimize jobs on one end, but it'll also make it more accessible for, let's say, like young filmmakers to be able to actually play in a field that used to take a lot more resources. So then they'll be actually needing to, so there might be more jobs becoming available because of that to balance that out. So, maybe that'll be true.
Yeah, super interesting. Super curious where it's gonna go. It's like throwing a dart into the darkness, like where it's gonna go, who the fuck knows?
Yeah,
It's hard to predict. I think by the time it becomes, like so sophisticated that we will be considering if our like skills are needed at all. I mean that's also just gonna affect all the other industries. That's gonna be a much bigger problem, you know?
And even just about artwork, right? It's like when you don't, if everything that is digital has been assisted with AI, is that going to make everything digital feel like just not fresh or not interesting or degrade the value of everything? I mean, we thought that already, and I mean, you can still see your hand in people's artwork, and we know that AI can't, let's just say, come up with like a cool design so much just yet, but that's probably becoming. We know it's great with environments and other things. When I think about like my daughter, she's getting ready to figure out her career, and she likes art and music, and one thing that I know it, is it's never gonna be able to replace like literally like the power of like a human performing, right? Like a music or for example, because she's a singer and a producer and stuff like that. There's things that are outside the bandwidth of what AI can actually interfere with.
You think the traditional art will have its niche? I mean, it's surely gonna have a niche, but do you think it's gonna have a bigger comeback?
I think so. I mean, I where I come back, I mean, the people, who knows? I had this interesting thought. Well, yes, I always appreciate traditional art. That's what I want to do when I retire. I just want to keep having fun and not having to worry about my like any traditional art having to make a paycheck. Then it doesn't become fun. And right now I'm just like, well, as long as people are paying me to make movies, and it's which I really enjoy. I'm a film buff, so I love seeing my work on front on in the cinema, right? So that's really, it's a way like to me that like my love of art began with seeing Blade Runner and seeing Sid Mead's images and thinking, wow, that contribution to be able to contribute to, it's not just cool designs and cool things, but just everything compact each other, like the sound, the score of that film, and the cinematography of that, and then of course the storyline, the poetry of that, all compounded together made me think that is like the that is just like I would love to be able to contribute to that in a art, just art together. So like as long as I can still play in that field, I still want to, and I don't feel like it's kind of selfish to take time away from that while I'm still have on the stock market. But then I had this but in, on a side note, I was looking at one of my favorite, as I was putting this presentation together, one of the things I talk about, just early inspirations, is Leonardo da Vinci, because his drawings, and he was a part scientist, part artist, part inventor, and he would just sort of sketch things, everything from like a fetus, a section of a fetus, to mechanical things, and was just thinking through sketches. Like, so I think of him as like the very first industrial designer, and I was thinking to myself, what if he had access to AI? That just thought came, and I had to kind of
That's an
push the
interesting
my,
thought.
yeah, push the boat out on that. That was just earlier today, and I was thinking, well, the honest truth is that we've all seen great artists lose their way. Everyone from filmmakers who created masterpieces, and then they get too much money, and then they lose their way, and other artists who get hand on, I've seen traditional artists get, when they first started using Photoshop, I was like, oh God, no, just stay with what you're doing, and it's like it's like a drug that you can abuse or something. You could, on one hand, you would hope people, like everyone, will use AI just to generate ideas, help them brainstorm more quickly or faster, and so that the idea that they end up making their own is more, I don't know, it's just advanced, but not relying on the tool to create their ideas, right? Their finished work.
You know, I don't know if I don't know how much you dabbled in with the AI tools that exist. Like, have you tried Midjourney or any of those tools?
Yeah, I dabbled with it, yeah.
Yeah. What was your like thought process from like first time seeing it, playing with it, seeing the results, whether you were impressed or not, and then like how would that go over time? Because it's very interesting for artists specifically what the reaction is.
Yeah, I mean, did you and I both work on that spider cage on Thor? Did you work
Yeah, I
on
think
Thor?
so. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah, yeah.
I basically when that Midjourney first came out, that movie had came out, and I was like, all right, let me just type in some prompts to see how if I could, how well I could do this assignment using that. And it really was, after spending an hour and retyping and stuff, it basically. I didn't like any of the designs. Some of the textures were cool. Some of the backgrounds I could have like erased out and just used the background, right? It's great for environments, but for design, it's really not. Maybe if there's a design that you could kitbash together, like you're saying, it's basically like plagiarism algorithm, right? It's like it's not really artificial intelligence. It's like So it doesn't have the intelligence to design, it just has the ability to compile. But so yeah, I mean in a way, so I didn't really touch it for that. To me honestly, while I'm using it now, sometimes it's like, okay, I need a guy running towards camera with a worried expression, in a running pose, something like that. Like I can instead of a Google search, to help make a frame, but
Yeah, it makes sense. It's a good filler. Good filler for detail or like a busy kind of work. My first impression when I, because I tried it when the Journey first came out, just like yourself. And then I've been playing with it quite extensively because I like to know what the tools can do when I talk about them, and the recent capabilities of something like Stable Diffusion and Midjourney are insane. Like in terms of how photorealistic it can get or stylized, it is, as you say, very quote unquote inspired by different styles and whatnot, or different artists, or technically just like literally you're ripping off some artists, but as you say, it's true. It doesn't really design anything. And it sort of there's this euphoric thing that happens when the first thing comes out, like your first image that looks super realistic or something, and you're like, wow, like I was able to get that in seconds, right? But then after 300 or 400 iterations of doing that, like it becomes this thing where it's like it's boring. Like there's no payoff for doing any of that, right? Like, oh, like this amazing image that I just created with this algorithm looks fantastic, but it loses its value literally seconds after. Like it becomes almost like a commodity, right? And I think that was my like the very very thing that I understood quickly is that it's lacking process. Like it's lacking this whole process of starting and trying things and coming, combining together, designing different shapes and compositions, and like trying different lighting and failing over and over, and then eventually like this clicks, or the version 6 of my tries finally gets what I wanted, right? But it's a journey, and it's the journey of sort of experience you gather, because you're getting no experience from just prompting. And like, yeah, you get experience on how to prompt better. That's the only experience you're getting, right? But you're not really getting and if you're not visually trained to understand what good lighting or composition is, whatever comes out of it is just like, oh, it's great, I can move on. You don't have that like, ah, it's not there yet, it's not the right angle, it's not,
Going back to like what you're asking about the value of traditional art, like right. So if I'm thinking about like my daughter's college admission for like say an art school. It's almost like any digital art is going to be just like, I just wouldn't want, if I was a professor, I wouldn't want to see any digital art, right? Because you just, there's just no way of knowing what what's in there. And this is true even before Midjourney. Everyone wants to see that, you know, foundational drawing and painting and stuff like that. So that's always been true. But I think that's going to even compound itself even more so. And you know, I was just like, I was saying that with this videographer friend who was, you know, kind of just interviewing me, like I had kind of forgotten that I had done a ton of life drawing earlier in my career. And I pulled some of that. I was like, oh, that, some of that's not so bad. And you know, part of just the ability when you have, because I still try to go to a, when I can, I was on a roll where I was going, starting my day every morning in a cafe with a sketchbook and just sort of like planning my day and planning some ideas and just, you know, starting for like an hour. And that if I actually on this last film, Fantastic Four, I was working with this production designer who really liked my sketches, so I would spend like the pretty much sometimes the whole, you know, days just sketching, it was so, it was so much fun, it was so rewarding, so I don't know, I would I hope I think that'll, hopefully that'll you know, continue to have value.
Me too. I mean, I think in the public's eye, yes. I think people will enjoy the idea of someone putting an effort and, skill into creation. Beyond just like, let me just shit out 1,000 images in a minute, or a full movie. I think it will.
But I mean, even the other thing is about like a thousand. Like, I've always find like any more than three images, three to five. Like, I'd rather, whenever I show work, I don't, I even if I have 10 or 20, it's like my job is to curate and to boil that down to the best ones. And I feel like, and someone told me that once, is that what, like something, it was some interesting thing about what happens when your brain is given more than a certain amount of choices, more than seven. It's like the same reason why phone numbers have a certain number of digits, right? Seven digits. It's about like what happens when you get past seven to your brain. And like you, he was telling me like, once you get past seven, you don't think any of them are right. Like, but when you have seven, you can kind of decide maybe which one of those is like the best or most successful of those seven. So I don't know. Like, that's, I think that's also a problem with AI and giving you so many choices. It's like if you don't have the ability, again, like those foundational things, to curate, it's important.
Yeah, the choice paralysis, like you get too much stuff. Have you ever been asked to, like, on any of the shows you worked on, to just like, hey, can you make a couple of sketches and just turn around and just make one? You know what I mean?
Wait, what do you mean?
I
It's
did.
asked to do more and you just do one?
Yeah, just like I did it like so many times. A production designer asked me like, yeah, can you make a couple of sketches? Like, sure, okay. And then I would make like one really good one.
I mean, and that's, you know, every artist has their brand, right? Like some are really good at doing a bunch that are less refined or something. And especially with design too. It's like I just, the thing is I can, I never, you never want people to pick a design that I personally don't like. So I, even if I've done like 10 sketches and I don't like seven of them, I'm not going to show them.
It depends. I think the people who understand, like specifically like directors and production designers who have a good taste and understand, art, like they're more like artistically visually driven, they can tell from just one image if that's what they're getting is what they need. And then when you and then if you flip it and you're showing it to someone who's like maybe more oriented towards the story, or you're working with producer or writer who are not necessarily like visually driven, they would look at it and would have no idea where to go, and then just like start like, oh, let me just become an art director for a second and try to nitpick those. Can you give me like five more, because I cannot make a decision, I mean, that's sort of like the rabbit hole you can get yourself into, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely true. And the other thing too, I've noticed about is about when you're saying about like people who have like the like say a director or production designer have the ability to talk in artistic language or even just like I've noticed, you know, when you're working with a client, right? They give you direction, they push you one way or the other, but. You know, like I know when I'm on a stumbling block with a design and it needs to have something, that typically the client doesn't have the language to describe. They can really just describe, they kind of know when they see it, right? That's always the case. They know when they see it. So it's really up, it's really, I always feel like the pressure is on to pull the rabbit out of the hat because. It's as opposed to just, oh, it'll get there because of their direction, right? It's not, their direction really isn't gonna pull the rabbit out of the hat. Like they kind of just know it when they see it. So you're like, well, shit, it's on me. It's really on me to just keep iterating, keep figuring it out, not show them too many things, because then you can, then the direction can start going sideways. Like it's if once you start showing too many sets, then like I don't know. I think it's I always I kind of found that both challenging, frustrating, but also kind of like really important to know as a designer. Like, and also because of the timeline. Like a lot of shows, I kind of have to nail it in my first pass. Like, there's not a ton of time. You don't get to like iterate something for months and then find something. Like, a lot of times these movies are made quickly, and the vehicles have to are the first things. That have to get built because they're so intensive, right? So there's a lot of pressure from the day you start. And I was like, holy shit, thank God that came together because there's just no other time left to you know, so you can't mess around. So like when yeah, but that's also very surprising too, is like, man, you to be a professional, you have to like kind of get there like on your first or second pass. I know that's not true. I mean, I've heard like the U ship on Star Wars. I've heard like there's like that thing like it took like a year of design back and forth. And there's some things that maybe certain franchises have production budgets to let that design process go.
Is there a way you like analyze, or are there like any kind of tricks you think about when starting to? Because I totally understand what you're saying. It's like when you're working with someone, whether it's for the first, like if you're working with a production designer or a director for like the third or fourth time, you truly understand what they want already. Like you know how they react to your stuff, so it's much easier. But like for the when you're starting with them for the first time, it's sort of like, I agree, a massive amount of pressure to figure out, are they gonna even like the stuff I'm doing? Like, should I like over impress and over render, or do the opposite? Just create sketches and whatnot. Like, do you have like a specific approach to that, or you kind of wing it? It's like, I'll just do my best and.
I mean the one question I ask is like okay, are we in the process of selling this movie? Like, so you need flashy images, right? Because to get the flashy image, there's only so many hours in the day, so right, so you're actually thinking about the mechanics or the design a little bit less, and you shouldn't be, I shouldn't be bogged down in that if it's just about getting a flashy image out, right? But if it's, if like, if sometimes they'll say, no, this movie's getting made, we're doing the real meat and potatoes right now. So then it's like, okay, let's actually, now then I don't have to worry about what I turn in being flashy. It can literally be about like, you know, like how are the actors going to get into this, like, you know, the stuff that really you have to go through. So that really helps. Yeah, I mean everyone's different. Some, you know, some people, it's, you know, they can't understand drawings or black and white, and they need flash and color and in situation. And so I try to just ask the questions to figure that out ahead of time, just save headache.
Asking a lot of questions helps for sure. Yeah, it's to me it's always been a pressure, like am I hitting the mark, you know? And like trying kind of like sometimes trying to overcompensate. But luckily, I don't think I've ever been in a spot where I like failed miserably. Although, actually, I do remember one situation where I didn't really fail, but I didn't really hit the mark, but I kept trying, is when I was hired like for the first time at Naughty Dog. And that was like the first one or two illustrations that I made. They were okay, They're like, yeah, it looks cool, And then the third one I made was this city kind of block with the, with this massive buildings that are overgrown, like this late afternoon reflected lighting and sort of like this kind of, dappled lighting through the leaves and a lot of like soft light and everything in like the soft light and shadows. And I remember when I made that, both like everyone, Bruce Straley, the game director, Neil, and like both presidents, like, holy shit, that's it, right? That was like the kind of like, oh, and the whole weight, like it was like a ton of weight on the shoulders, and it's like dropping the rucksack, after like a long hike. That's exactly how it felt like,
Oh, good analogy. Nice. Nice.
Do you have a situation like that in your career where you're like not really, or like just almost getting there, but not really, and then like this like one banger.
Well, the story that came to mind actually is you want to hear a failing story?
Yeah, always.
I'm gonna get a beer for this one. Hold
All
on.
right.
This is my Tom Cruise story.
All right. The failing stories are the best stories because I feel like people make this image of like being so professional and perfect that they never fuck up, but we all do. We all kind of make mistakes and then learn from them. So yeah, I'm curious to hear.
Yeah, at least you get a good story out of it. So like when I first started ILM, right? So this was like, my dream job, getting into George Lucas's company. And one of my first I started off as a storyboard artist, and then that's how they kind of train you. And then one of my first art director jobs was on the very first Mission Impossible. So this is
Okay.
directed by Brian De Palma, who's a famous director. And the visual effects supervisor is John Knoll, who's like one of the inventors of Photoshop. And
Yeah.
he so they he says, hey, well, we having this meeting in London with Tom Cruise and Brian De Palma, and I was invited to come out there to help design this visual effects sequence. So I'm at this at this A-listers meeting. It's just Brian De Palma, Tom Cruise, myself, some producers, and they're trying to figure out. I don't know if you remember in the movie, but they wanted just this action sequence on this train as it is going through. There's a helicopter chase, there's a train, Tom Cruise is on top with the antagonist, and they want to go through the channel tunnel, and they want to have the helicopter go into the tunnel and have Tom Cruise just barely escape death. But they can't figure out why a helicopter would ever go into fly into a tunnel, right? They know they want to have this visual effects sequence, and they want to shoot it with models, and it'd be really wow, a really big effect. But they just can't figure it out. So this whole meeting is trying to figure out why it should go in there. So as they kicking around ideas, a couple hours, eventually Tom Cruise says, "Well, does anyone have any ideas?" And I think to myself, I mean, first of all, I'm just silent. I'm just there to draw pictures of storyboards and if anyone needs them, right? And I think to myself, oh man, if I can come out with a banger idea right now, my career is going to explode. Like I'm seeing like the montage of myself. It's going like Tom Cruise is like recommending me to like A-list directors, and then I'm on the cover of Time magazine. They're like, who is this guy? And the whole time I'm thinking about this, I'm not actually thinking about any ideas. And then, so after like a minute, Tom's like, ah, I've got it. I've got it myself. He's like, what if the helicopter's chasing the train, and as right when, at the very last second, the helicopter has nowhere to go, and so it has to pull up and do a giant loop-de-loop, and at the end of the loop, he's got nowhere to go except for the tunnel. And I'm so eager to speak and be part of this table, I just say the first thing that comes to mind, which is, well, that doesn't make any sense, Tom. And then everything goes quiet. And then I have to keep going, and I have to go like, and what is even, I'm like, oh shit, I gotta keep going with this. So I'm like, why would a helicopter even do a loop-de-loop? And what is even a loop-de-loop? Isn't that just a loop? And my supervisor's like looking at me like, shut up. And even Brian De Palma's looking at me because Tom Cruise is the producer of this movie practically. So, but eventually, after what felt like forever science, he goes, the kid's got a point. Let's keep working on if it wasn't for me, you would see a giant loop-de-loop in Mission Impossible.
That would be
I
funny.
saved the day.
Yeah, I love it though. Yeah, I had a did I have any situation like that in my career? I had one with Rupert, where he would ask me about something. We were in a meeting with producers, and I was on the Ghost in the Shell, and it's just like he would ask me about a design and like some of the earlier designs that I did for myself, and I think it was just spitballing ideas like, hey, what if we did something similar to this? And I'm like, not until we make my movie. And it was
Oh, man.
like a moment of silence, and then everyone's laughing,
Oh, yeah.
but it wasn't any like, hey, like let me fucking, here's my moment.
Yeah. Was he good to
Yeah,
work
so
with?
it's hilarious. Yeah, I love Rupert. He's a great guy to work with. When we had
Awesome.
a when we were doing Ghost in the Shell, I mean, so the way I got to work with him for the first time was this canceled show that I was doing with James Chinland, production designer, and Rupert was supposed to direct it. The show was canceled, like 99% of the shows in Hollywood, ever. But he really loved the robot designs I did for that, like really loved them. And I remember James was telling me like, "I'm sorry that we were canceling the show. Like, I know you wanted because I wasn't even in a union back then. Like, if they didn't cancel, that would be my like entry to get to the Art Directors Guild." And I literally missed like a few days of like work that would needed to be done. It's like, oh, that sucks. And but he said like, look, like I know it sucks. You'll have your time. Rupert really likes you, and that's a good friend to make. Oh, great. I totally forgot about it, right? And then literally a year later, Rupert just calls me out of the blue. It's like, hey, let's make Ghost in the Shell. I'm like,
Sweet.
fucking, let's go. And when I was work, yeah, when we were working together, I pretty much had like a free rein to do whatever I like. And he would maybe have feedback here and there, because he really liked everything I was doing. There was like very specific assets where we had to go back and forth quite a bit, but I was like very specifically to the cost and making sure, all this kind of stuff, right? But it was amazing. Like, it was amazing to a point where, someone in the art department, because they were shooting in New Zealand back then, had an idea to name the hotel in which like the film starts with the geishas as Maché Hotel, but they couldn't find Chinese letters,
Oh,
or
really?
like it was Chinese because of Hong Kong, like Chinese letters to kind of match that. So they just literally fucking print my name on the entrance of the hotel, just like Maché. As the guys are running, it just says Maché. I was like, holy crap.
That's
So
perfect.
that was super funny. That was kind of like a highlight. But yeah, we've worked on a couple of shows since then.
I mean, your
So
style is perfect for it, and your work was killer. And
thank you.
when a I feel say like, when directors cast, I mean, I was saying this to someone, like when a director casts an artist, it's like casting an actor, right? They choose them for what they already like in their work, and they just have to come in like your work was already perfect for him, so it was easy fit. And that's great when you can connect with the same bandwidth, the same vibe as somebody. My when, I wonder if I can tell this story. There's maybe I'm gonna try to do it without naming names. Maybe you can figure it out.
Sure.
But I don't want to cross any political lines. You always have to be careful. But there's a director I really wanted to work with, and I really wanted to get his attention. So he had called for me to when he started on this film, but I wasn't available, and I couldn't get out of it. And so he had to, the production had to get going. And once and he was like, "Well, let me know when you're free." So I knew at that point that he had already hired artists, and there was, it's never guaranteed that they can just make a space for you because production's production, right? So I was actually going to be in this director's town for, like, my wife had a conference there and I was speaking at. So I decided to just email this director saying, "Hey, I'm going to be in your town. Would you like to meet, can we meet for coffee?" And I'm, and I was like, "Well, shit, I gotta entice him with." So I said, "I'm gonna have some artwork that's gonna blow you away." And he wrote back and he's like, "Yeah, let's do that. That timing is perfect." And I was like, "Oh, fantastic, this is great." And then I realized, "Oh shit, that's in 2 weeks. I don't have any artwork. I don't have any ideas of what to do." And I've just promised this A-list director images that are gonna blow him away, which is like a high bar. So I went to work and I was like, "Oh man." And I had a job too, so I had on my downtime I created like four images, and I showed him the work there, and the meeting was great, and the images were like, it wasn't like, "Oh, these images are great." He was really enthused about how, like, about my passion for the project, and we had awesome, like, conversation about the project. And so that all worked out, and the images that I'd done were just, just kind of get his attention, right? And then the movie is shot, and I'd worked on it, and he rings me up and says, "I've had one of those images that from that meeting on my laptop this entire movie, and I've never known how to work. I never knew there was never a way for me to put that in the movie, but now that I've seen the whole movie done, I want to make that the be oh, I want the movie to begin with that image." And let's I was like, "Can you hire can you I want to hire you back to kind of figure that out more." And I was like, "Wow." So to me, like, that was really cool, because it was like, basically I just closed my eyes and imagined what I could envision this to look like for me personally, right? And for him to want that in this opening was like amazing.
That's great. That's awesome. Yeah. It's very rare. You know this too. Working directly with director is rare. Like very rare. You mostly work with like production designers and video game art directors, let's say. But it's also just, I think, just more fun. Like not to disparage on production design, but it's just like m closer to the source. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, definitely feels that way.
that is that sorry, what you described there is literally like why my what motivates me the most to do my job, is because I was talking about with this a friend, and about like, "Why don't you take time off? Why don't you do this?" And like, right now, like, I'm such a film and cinema lover, and that when you can get in those close relationships, it's really, it doesn't make your credit change. It doesn't, no one cares. It's just literally like the artistic process. And being, like right now, I'm on a film with just the director, production designer, and it's so early that we're just bouncing a whole lot of what ifs and coming up with imagery, and that's just the gold mine of what, motivates me. Because it's just so fun to work that way.
Yeah,
So I mean, and
you're not thinking to retire anytime soon.
well, I mean, if as soon as I basically what like I was telling my friend Emmanuel, you might know Emmanuel, like, he's a good buddy of
Oh
mine.
yeah, he's
Yeah,
great.
and we, we go out to lunch every month, once a month, and just talk shop,
Don't you guys live like pretty close to each other in
yeah,
like
in the
Bay
Bay
Area?
Area. I live in Berkeley. He lives down South San Francisco, and I don't know. It's basically just, there are lulls when just nothing cool is happening, right? And
Yeah.
And when that happens, that's when I would take some time off. As long as there's some interesting stuff going on, I want to, enjoy it.
Yeah. How did you get to know Wachowskis? How did that whole thing happen? I'm asking because like it's interesting when you were talking about them treating artists almost like family. I had exactly the same treatment when I went to see the Ghost in the Shell sets, the Ghost in the Shell sets in New Zealand, and Rupert's like, "You're gonna be in town, like, come in." And I would be in the set in his booth together with DP, talking to Scarlett Johansson. I was like, "Oh my God, like, what is happening?" So that was kind of like super cool. But yeah, I'm curious, like, how, because like I remember seeing the stuff you've done for Matrix. So like, what? That was the first stuff I've seen from you, by the way. And I was like, who the fuck is that guy? Like, this is just crazy. So I'm very curious, like, how did that all went down?
When I decided to leave Industrial Light and Magic, I was an art director for I was there for 6 years, and I realized, this is like I was at my dream sort of job, I had thought, but I really wasn't doing what the pre-production art that I like had like that I that going back to the Sid Mead sketches and the stuff that really inspired me, I was like, that is the dream, is to be at the very beginning. What we were talking about with the director, like that is the pot of gold. And so I basically quit, and I was like, somehow I had gotten the address of the Wachowskis. I basically went and dug around, and I found an address, and I put a portfolio together, and sent it to them, and they were like, move to LA and let's get going. So I had moved from San Francisco to LA, and that was like my big, like, I'm going to LA, I'm going to Hollywood, because Lucasfilm is up in San Francisco, so I got a place in Santa Monica, and they had this like gorgeous facility in Venice, and that was like some of the best times of my life, because really getting into pre-production and meeting people I've worked with a long time, like Tani Kunitaki, Steve Skaros, Jeff Darrow was there, and so we've did a lot of movies all over the world together,
That's sick.
and yeah, and like you say, like when the directors treat you like that, you get invited to the parties, the after parties, it just makes it, yeah, it just makes it really rewarding. If I was if I hope n younger artists who are in the industry, I would say that's a reason, I was about to say reason to live in LA like yourself, to make sure you get a chance to have that experience in person with talent, and not just stay remote from the time you're 20 to 50 or whatever,
Yeah.
right? The rest of your career. So anyway, it's gold there.
Yeah, maybe not LA anymore, because I like almost no productions are done in LA anymore.
Exactly, yeah.
But if you have a chance to work on something and you really like it, just go and be there if you can. If you can make it happen, to go and be there and then next to the team, the lessons you get are invaluable, just being like in person rather than working remotely. And then when you get older, you can just remote everything. Yeah, it's funny, man. Like, it's you mentioned, all the shows you were working on. Like, we worked on a few together as well. Not in the office, but like online. Yeah, like the Jupiter Ascending and the last one you've mentioned, Thor. I was working on that like remotely too. But yeah, it's been a few, and then you work with like a bunch of people I worked with like before, like, oh, I'm pretty sure you worked with Owen Patterson before and John Gaea. Yeah, both amazing people.
Totally.
John is amazing as well. Like, I've pretty much since the first project I did with him was the Jupiter Ascending, and we've worked on like seven or eight projects since then, like different ones. He's just an amazing human being, and I get to meet his fiance and wife now and all that stuff. So great. It's like we send each other Christmas cards.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to like hold up your time. I know you're on, strapped on time. And so we can like slowly wrap it up. I think by the time we're gonna release this, the new Dune is coming
Yeah.
out. I know you worked on it too. And I
Yeah.
saw like the Lego Ornithopter too,
Oh
which is
yeah.
fun.
It's
You
got it
have
right
it? That's amazing.
there. The Lego one's still in the box, but this is one you can buy too. This is
Right,
a
yeah.
all
I
kit.
know you designed it. How fun was that shit, dude?
The what to work on it or what do you mean?
Yeah, the work, like everything. And
Oh
working
yeah.
with Denis as well. Denis is one of my, like, from the newer director's cut, like the cut of directors, he's like my favorite by far.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just think myself so lucky because even before like the first movie he did this movie called Incendies and of course Prisoner, and I just thought like, wow, this guy is
Both
amazing.
amazing
I
movies. Yeah.
love his movies. And I mean, when I think about like some of my favorite movies and my personal like top whatever 10, it's very hard, but I mean, obviously, Blade Runner's in there, but when I think about Danny, like I love movies that like, of course, Blade Runner for its design. I like, Lawrence of Arabia for its, colonialism and epicness of it. I like Terrence Malick's film Thin Red Line for its poetry, Baraka, and, about nature. And like Denis encompasses like kind of like all those qualities in the types of
Yeah.
film that he makes. Also, to be really honest, the most important thing is about intelligent science fiction. I get, most movies just use science fiction as a vehicle to tell an action story and just kind of throw away. But like, my thing about like I think the reason why Blade Runner was so important to me as a child is because it really made me feel something in the way like great science fiction does. Like it tells a human story, but through the lens of science fiction, and it almost makes you feel that more than if it was just on the nose. Like so
Right.
I don't know. So I'm just really lucky that I got to be invited to that party. Yes, it's super fun. I just saw the re-release of Dune 1 when they re-released it in IMAX, and obviously the second one's coming gonna come out. It's getting great reviews, and that's the dream. Like the whole thing about like my dream is to have worked on something that's considered a science fiction masterpiece, and I pretty much gave up on that dream about 10 years ago. And you're just like, they just don't make those anymore.
Except of the knee, yeah. Yeah, it's rare. Yeah, it's just one of those things where you work on something and it's like, is it gonna be good or not? Like, who the fuck knows, you know?
Yeah, and we as artists we can't beat ourselves. It's like it there's no way to keep it away from your ego, but you have to. You just have to do your job as best as you can, and then hope that you get noticed when the right opportunity comes along. So.
Yeah, true, true. I think it's a good moment, good quote to end on.
Yeah, man. Thanks
Well,
for the
appreciate your
invite,
time,
man.
dude.
We
It's
should
been
chat
a long
off.
time coming.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course, of course. You have my number. We can
Yeah,
talk. Well, I know you're preparing for a conference, so I'll let you do that. Good luck with whether it's a travel or not. I'm pretty sure it's travel. And yeah, I'm super excited. By the time this comes out, it will be already after the premiere, but I already have tickets for Dune 2 for
Oh
next
man,
week.
yeah.
Yeah.
I go when I at both of these the last Dune my friend rented a like a party bus, like a luxury like a limo van bus, and we like party there, went to the movie, party back, and Dune inspired cocktails. It was a whole thing, and so I've got two viewings this weekend and next with a whole bunch of friends, so it's gonna be great.
That's awesome. All right, well, have fun with that, and thanks again, dude. Always
Yeah, man,
fun talking with you.
let's do it again, pal. Take care.
Yep, take care. All right, I'll stop.